Marini's Media.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, it's a Hello Old Friends special. Pochettino in at Paris Saint-Germain. And just when you couldn't face another turkey, Dominic and Christian Gross are back too. We break out the star charts and TFL journey planners and tackle Europe's other big stories as well, including 2 days till he can do one for free. What's the Messi master plan now? It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Yeah, hello, listener. Thanks for joining us. It's currently December the 29th of the year 2020, and this is a brand new Totally Football Show European edition. I, James Richardson, am joined by Julien Laurens.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, Jules. Raphael Honigstein's with us.
Hello, James.
Over there it's Alvaro Romeo.
Hola, hola.
And also James Horncastle.
Good day to you all.
Fantastic. Happy New Year. Feliz Año Nuevo and all that. Oh, I might have just wished you a happy new anus, actually. Is that right? If you say Año, I get it's Año Nuevo, isn't it? No, that's the anus. Which one's the anus?
I think that there is a distinction between Año and Ano.
Yes.
Definitely.
Which one
Anano,
is
Ano? Isn't that a dwarf?
As well, yeah.
Alvaro, isn't it true, beyond any Happy New Year business, today we're recording this actually on the 28th. And am I right in thinking, Alvaro, that that's April Fool's Day in Spain?
Yes, absolutely. It is. It's the day of the Holy Innocent, which is a Catholic religious holiday. Well, at the beginning it was more religious than it is now. Nowadays it's a day to make pranks and to spread fake news and jokes and all that. Every time you make one joke or you are the receiver of one, you say inocente, inocente, which is calling a person that they have been very naive for believing that fake news. Yeah, that's
brilliant.
That's the whole thing about.
I can't wait to see what japes you're going to spread throughout today's show. By the way, have there been in the Spanish press this morning, were there lots of fake stories?
I've seen only one, which is Mundo Deportivo, the diary from Barcelona, saying that Gerard Piqué was going to be a candidate for the next Barcelona elections. And that is the only one I have found. I also thought that the Diego Costa story was at the beginning a joke, but there are so many newspapers talking about it that I have to believe that is true. I mean, apparently he asked the club to leave now in January.
Wow. There's not much that's funny about that for Atletico fans. Or maybe there is. We'll be talking much more about La Liga, the Bundesliga, and also Serie A in the course of today's show. May we begin, though, with a quick moment of the week to cover the days that have passed since our last show. James, lead us off.
Moment of the week? I mean, it has to be Leonard Slutsky, no? And his rendition of Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas. Special.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. Wait, just one thing I need. And I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree.
And the biscuits, the VR biscuits that he ate as well. Didn't he eat like a biscuits in the shape of a football shirt with VR written on it or something?
Yeah, Zlatan has also bought a forest, apparently, for €3 million.
A moment of the week, but it is Christmas related, so I'll grant you that. Jules, how about a moment of the week for you?
Yes, it's Neymar's party. We're catching the flight with the whole family just after the show to go to Brazil for New Year's Eve at his house. 500 people, no social distancing, big party over 5 days. We'll just come back when the kids go back to school. It will be epic.
Excellent. Alvaro.
Well, it has to be Lionel Messi's interview, the interview he gave on Sunday, the 27th of December, in which he talked a little bit about his life, the human aspect of being a Barcelona player, and he gave few hints about his future, not many, to be honest.
Ooh. All right, we're going to be asking you about those hints later on. But first, Rafa, your moment of the week.
Well, I'm surprised Jules let me have that one, but of course it's Thomas Tuchel's dismissal on the eve of Christmas that came. Maybe not as a total surprise, but the timing was curious.
Indeed. That's a story we're going to begin today's show with next.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend. Brought to you by Paddy Power.
Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4+-fold acca lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Cette information surprise, elle a été donnée par l'équipe et par le journal Bild. Le PSG se sépare de son entraîneur Thomas Tuchel. Pourtant, son contrat courait jusqu'en juin 2021.
Information à surprise détonnée en Paris on Christmas Eve. Jules, Thomas Tuchel out on his touche. Merry Christmas.
Indeed. It was brutal. It was brutal. We saw it coming, although it was still a bit surprised, like Rafa said, for the timing of it. Thomas Tuchel will leave with a big check of around 5-6 million euros, which is a lot of money to celebrate on Christmas, but without a job. I'm sure he will find another club. But for now, they felt both in Paris and in Doha a few things. The first one was that the results were not as good as they should have been. Third in Ligue 1, albeit just 1 point behind the two leaders, Lille and Lyon, is not really a good look. The fact that they only scrapped through to the last 16 of the Champions League in the difficulties that we've seen is not good enough either. And it's a decision that hasn't been taken like hastily. It was Pochettino went to Doha 2 months ago to have an interview with the Emir of Qatar to show you that it was something that they had planned before. And the timing was just everybody was going away on holidays after the game against Strasbourg on the 23rd in the night. So that was really the only time where they could have meet Tuchel in person, Leonardo, that is, and his staff, to tell them the bad news and then prepare for the post-Tuchel era with Pochettino and his staff coming in. So as a lot of players are already left on private jets, Leonardo told Thomas Tuchel that he was no more the PSG manager.
Crikey. So they just beaten Strasbourg 4-0. And looked pretty good in that performance. Only 4 months ago, of course, they were playing in the Champions League final. You say they scraped through to the last 16. They qualified top of the group. He's got the best win percentage of any manager in Ligue 1 history. Pochettino, I'm not sure if he's actually signed yet, but it's given as a given that he's going to be taking over. He's actually got quite a hard act to follow in many ways.
Yeah, I see your point. Of course, the stats are great and Tuchel did win the domestic treble last year and the first ever Champions League final for the club, although lost to Bayern Munich. But they are the things like we spoke about it on the show, and I saw even James talking about it on Twitter the other day with one of his followers who was sort of questioning Tuchel, and James rightly so. I mean, I was so proud of you, Horny. Said, yeah, but you know, they lost to Marseille for the first time at home in the league in 11 years and to Lyon for the first time at home in the league for 14 years. And they could not even beat Lille. So they also lost to Monaco after being 2-0 up half time. So there was a lot of things. There was a lot of issues there. Tactically, the fact that he kept playing Marquinhos in midfield and Danilo Pereira, who's always been a midfielder in his whole life, at the back. A lot of those things, plus the tensions with Leonardo. I think the accumulation made that they just thought he was not the right man anymore.
I take your points, but what happened when he played Marquinhos at the back? Was that any better? Also, weren't the results at the start of this season partly due to the fact that they'd gone all the way to the Champions League final, so they didn't get the preseason?
Yeah,
like
but
everybody else.
If I can jump in here, I mean, I feel that Tuchel would have been sacked already 4 months ago, were it not for Marquinhos and Choupo-Moting scoring in stoppage time against an Atalanta side that was down to 10 men. That was in the lead almost at the end of that game, and they would have been dumped out. And I think it's interesting, we've spoken about this regularly, really. Even in Lisbon at the final eight, there was a sense that he was on the brink. He's felt like he's been on the brink for a long, long time, despite these relative successes that he's had. And ultimately, you know, he's no different to what's gone before him. They still haven't won the Champions League, and they had their best opportunity to do that in the final eight, particularly given their route to the final. Okay, they ended up coming up against the best team in the continent in 2020, which is Bayern. But yeah, they put out Atalanta, Leipzig. You know, in some respects, the deck was stacked in their favour in the end to get through. So I don't find the timing curious either. Ultimately, it's a winter break. It's the one opportunity where you can bring in a new manager. And I think also managers who have been out of work, like Pochettino, like Allegri, are having to reassess things in that in a pre-pandemic world, they said, look, we're not going to come in during the season because we want a pre-season and we want a transfer window. And instead, there are no pre-seasons anymore. So you just have to get in when you can. And I think that's in some respects why Poch has decided to come in now.
Fair enough. But does this underline the fact that, as Tuchel himself was saying in an interview not long ago, that just being a good coach won't save you in this job? There's a lot of other things riding on this. It's going to be a very, very tough ask for him.
Yeah, but Tuchel was right in that interview that he gave to Sports One, which, by the way, I think he was already sacked. They had made the decision before that interview that he gave just before the Strasbourg game. But even that didn't help him again, because already a few times publicly he's criticised the way the club had been run by Leonardo, but also by Qatar, really, and by Nasser Al-Khelaifi.
Compared to, say, what Antonio Conte does at San Siro, it's like nothing.
They're different ownership. You know, I think there's a way where you work with the Qataris that maybe is very different than working with other owners. But they certainly didn't like what he was saying, the criticism that he sort of repeated around the transfer window that they made, the fact that you have to be more than a coach. There's too much politics in Paris. It's not just a football club. And I agree to a certain extent with him. And also, I think where he will be disappointed, and I think a lot of people watching him in Paris were as well, is that I think he had great ideas coming in. And he never felt that he could do the tactics that he wanted, put the game in place that he wanted, because he's been slagged off for the lack of identity of his team, which is true. I think he would say, but with Neymar and Mbappe, you can't put anything in place, because they're almost players who have to play individual football, not as a team sport, to be able to succeed. And I can see why at times he struggled to find an answer to the issues at the club, to why there were problems, and why he felt so frustrated at times not to be able to be the manager that he really wanted to be, tactically especially and work-wise, because of the players that he had.
It'd be good to get Rafa's opinion on this, because it seems that there's a trend in Tuchel's career. We saw it at Dortmund, where he has problems managing up. He has problems getting on with sporting directors, owners, clashes with them. I think, you know, that is one of the reasons why he got the sack this time around.
You're absolutely right that his fallout with Michael Zorc and Sven Mislintat at Dortmund was one of the main reasons why Dortmund just couldn't continue with him. Even then, though, they tried to accommodate him as long as possible, and they went to the entire second season winning the cup, thinking that he is actually such a good manager that perhaps we have to overlook these other issues, but ultimately they just couldn't go on because he did also fall out with influential people in the team itself. So that is an issue. I think he won't be the last one, though, to have problem with the way that the structure works at PSG, when you have Leonardo doing his own thing effectively, and I think making decisions that perhaps are not in line with what a coach needs. And what I would say in his defense is that he got probably the closest that we have seen anyone when it comes to making PSG play like a team. And they were the better team in the final against Bayern. I think Bayern were the better team in the competition. They were a better team, you know, throughout 2020 or the first half of 2020. But if you look the way that the game went and the chances that they created, I think they probably shaded it. So I don't want to say Tuchel has been unlucky, but I think there's a lot of things he got right, but as James hinted at, and maybe Jules can expand on that, there were other issues maybe off the pitch.
But Rafa, can I ask, what do you think Tuchel's going to go next, and where would you see him fitting in well?
Well, Tuchel is going to go where they want him. I think at the moment there is no really the kind of opening that that he would straight away jump into. I think he's much more likely to take a few months off and, you know, take stock and relax. He took a whole year out, remember, when he left Mainz, waiting a long time before the right offer came along. He went to PSG to win stuff. He managed to do that. I think his reputation has not suffered from that 1.5 years in charge there. And I think whoever wants to have a manager who plays a very innovative, exciting, attacking style of football will ring him. Whether that, you know, is going to happen immediately, I'm not sure. There's a lot of I think, pretty basic speculation in Germany that he's sort of just about to go to Man United or maybe Arsenal next week. And I don't think there's any substance to it simply because those positions are not available right now. But I'm sure that he will be in the mix for the next big jobs that will come along, probably by the time March or April happens and we know one or two clubs wanting to make a big change in the summer. I think he'll be one of the candidates considered.
Mm, especially with Pochettino out of the mix, snapped up by PSG, Jules L'Equipe, with the headline, "Christmas has come early," essentially with a big picture of Mauricio. Are you excited? Former PSG player, of course, Pochettino.
Yeah, he arrived at the club almost 20 years ago to the day. He joined in January 2001 from Espanyol. Luis Fernandez brought him to the club. He became then the captain, of course. He had 2.5 really good years. I think he really loved the city and loved the clubs and the fans loved him too. And I think it's a big challenge. And it's certainly if you look at his philosophy and his style of football, especially, again, we have to go back to Mbappe and Neymar. How do they respond to how much he will ask of them, what he will ask them to do in terms of counter-press and press and running and movement? We know that they don't have the most desire for that, those kind of things. They like having the ball, and that's what matters a lot to them, and that's it. But I think they will have to change their attitude, the behavior. He can't fall out with them either. So it'd be very interesting to see what the dynamic is there. As soon as he arrives already, him and his assistant are thinking that maybe bringing forward a little bit the date to return to training, which originally is January the 3rd, which is only 3 days before the next league game on January the 6th. A lot of the clubs in Ligue 1 are actually coming back today. Mm. But Tuchel and his staff have decided to give the players a bit longer to have a break.
Or to finish their five-day Christmas parties.
Especially for Neymar, yeah, because you need that long to celebrate Christmas and the New Year. But I think Pochettino already is thinking, hang on a minute, 3rd of Jan, when we got a game on the 6th of Jan, and then big games coming up with the Community Shield against Marseille on January the 13th, the big rivalry, which will be one of Pochettino's first games in charge. Then obviously the Champions League next month in February against Barcelona. So he was already thinking, making plans of changing things that Tuchel was doing. But it'd be very fascinating, I think, to see that dynamic between him and the dressing room. I think he's got a certain charisma and an aura that you could see the players, you know, going for him and really be behind him and everything. But let's see maybe if he changes a little bit there and there as well compared to how he was at Spurs.
From all the managers that won the title in 2019, only Pep Guardiola is standing, the manager who has power in the team. But the rest of the managers, the likes of Valverde, Nico Kovac, Thomas Tuchel, or Massimiliano Allegri, let alone Maurizio Sarri, who was there in 2020, they are all gone. So as you can see, the credit for winning a league title is very short nowadays.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. Neymar's party, Jules, is that going to cause any problems at PSG? Just to fill anybody in if they miss this. So he basically rented a villa on the coast. It's holding at the moment, is that right? A five-day party is underway at the moment, or has it been shut down?
His people are playing it down now, saying that it's not a 5 days in a row sort of party. There's just a, like every day for sort of 5 days, they had planned to have parties, not with 500 people.
No,
it's in his big mansion on the coast, but they sort of built an area in the garden so people can have fun outside. There's no restriction right now in Brazil, although they were heavily hit by the virus, but there's no restriction like we can have in Europe of, you know, 6 people or 8 people indoors and this and that. You can do what you want pretty much. But they're certainly playing it down because obviously he got hammered in the press pretty much everywhere in Spain, in France, in Brazil as well, for even thinking about doing that kind of party. So I think it would be very different to what maybe they had planned originally.
All right. Lots more Ligue 1 news to come, including the return of another old friend. But next up, and also having a rough week pre-Christmas, like Thomas Tuchel, it's the Old Lady of Turin.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
Tuesday, 22nd of December, James Horncastle, Juve dropped 6 points. Boom. First off, they saw that 3-0 win that they'd been given after Napoli failed to turn up at the Juventus Stadium overturned, Napoli gaining a point and Juve stripped of three. That game, the Juve-Napoli match back in October, will now be played in May. Then having lost that 3-0, they then lost 3-0 against Fiorentina that evening. Huge. Incredible. James.
Yeah, and surprising. There was some speculation as to whether the announcement of Napoli winning their third and final appeal against that decision had in some respects destabilized Juventus, because they found out maybe an hour before the start of the game. They actually learned of the decision whilst they were on the bus going to the Allianz Stadium. But yeah, their heaviest defeat to Fiorentina in Turin since 1955. And no one saw it coming, really, because Fiorentina, as we mentioned in the last show, have been so underwhelming so far this season. They'd sacked Beppe Iacchini, they'd sold Federico Chiesa to Juventus, they brought back Cesare Prandelli to take over as coach, and he had failed to win a game since taking over, I think in eight attempts. And yet they get ahead early. Wonderful pass from Franck Ribéry for Dusan Vlahovic. Juventus then go down to 10 men. And I were deservedly behind at that point. I thought they then played actually quite well until the second goal, and then they just crumbled. And another goal went in. And it's one of those games, James, that I think will leave a scar. It's one that Pirlo skeptics will point to and say, is he out of his depth? This guy is a rookie coach. A little bit like people did after the game against Barcelona at the Allianz Stadium back in October as well. But, you know, they had been playing well up until that point in the league. You know, they put out that kind of statement display in Barcelona at the Camp Nou. They then played really well against Parma just a few days before the Fiorentina game. But as I mentioned, Parma have been really poor. They lost to Benevento, I think, in the same midweek round as Juventus lost to Fiorentina. And you mentioned this kind of 1-2 punch that Juventus took on that night. Well, it only got worse on Wednesday when the Milan clubs kept winning. Inter have won six in a row. And Milan then won in stoppage time against Lazio. And Milan have 10 points on Juventus at this moment in time. I think Inter have nine. Now, yeah, the chances of Juventus coming back and winning the title for a 10th straight year, I think now look very slim. Right. Because anyone who gives Antonio Conte a 9-point advantage, I'm sorry, I don't think you're going to catch or overhaul him.
Juve do have a game in hand, the clash with Napoli, which is now scheduled for May. This game with Fiorentina, when they were 1-0 down, they had, I think, a pretty stonewall penalty that the referee somehow managed to miss, and amid much ironic cheering, no doubt, from fans who've suffered decades of penalties getting given the other way. But it was, I think, a remarkable decision by the referee. Whether that would have made a difference in this game, I'm not sure. Ribéry, as you mentioned, was in outstanding form. To what extent might this result be a turning point for Fiorentina, whether or not it is for Juventus?
I think it's still too early to tell. I spoke to some people at Fiorentina after the game and they said, look, that's what we really needed after, well, just a long spell of having what is on paper a talented side, but one that has clearly, I think, been weighed down by one bad result after another and found it very difficult to kind of click since then. I still think that it's going to be tough for Fiorentina unless they intervene in the January transfer window. By tough, I mean, yeah, play it to expectation, which is, yeah, this is a team that has the seventh highest wage bill in the league. It should be contending for a place in Europe. Yeah, they've already left themselves a lot to do. I think they need an experienced striker in this window. I think that's what they're looking for. Even though Vlahovic has scored in his last three games, I think they just need someone who has a track record of scoring in this league and can kind of take the pressure off some of the younger guys. But yeah, I mean, just remarkable. I mean, you think of some of the really good Fiorentina sides that we've seen over, not so much in recent years, but you know, going back into the 90s, struggled to win in Turin. To win by this margin with this team in this state was pretty astounding, really. And I think that's one of the it's left a very loud echo over the winter break as to what state the old lady's in.
Mm. Well, it means that the only unbeaten side now in Europe's top five leagues is Milan. Milan, who, as you mentioned, played the next day. They were 2-0 up at home to Lazio, only for the Biancocelesti to come roaring back and make it 2-2 after 90 minutes. We go now to our correspondent at San Siro, Tiziano Crudelli.
Goal! 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 Deo mio Deo! Deo mio Deo!
The sweet sound there of Theo Hernandez striking the winner in stoppage time. Milan, who have twice as many points as they did at this stage last season, will be facing who this weekend when the Serie A returns?
It's Super Pippo's Benevento, James. And I say Super Pippo because Benevento are in mid-table. No one expected them to be doing this well, but particularly on the back of their last appearance in Serie A when they didn't get a single point until December. They're sitting pretty. They're above the likes of Samp, Bologna, Fiorentina, Parma, and Pippo, who had some bad experiences in the top flight. First, when he was in charge of Milan at the back end of the Berlusconi era, and then at Bologna, has proven himself that he's able to learn from his mistakes and has become a pretty good coach.
Could he be the man to hand Milan their first defeat in the league this season? We shall see this weekend. All right, much more to come. Next up, it's some exciting tidings from the Bundesliga.
Welcome back to the ground. Tickets, please. Thank you, madam. And let's see, sir. Oh, sorry, no, you're in Tier 3.
No, I ain't. We're in Tier 2. We're allowed to be here. You can't take away my freedom.
Tier 3 of the stadium over there.
Donut.
What? By the donut stand.
Stadiums might not yet be full, but Paddy Power's offers are at full capacity. If one leg of your 4+4 acca lets you down, get a free bet on all football and all markets. Paddy Power.
Max free bet £10. Min odds 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. Item plus begambleaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Bundesliga currently on its winter break. What do you call the winter break, Rafa?
Die Winterpause.
Sounds fair. Back on the 2nd, that's this Saturday, with a new man in charge at Schalke, Rafa. What's the nearest tube station to Gelsenkirchen?
Gelsenkirchen is a city, so it has its own tube stations, James.
Hurrah.
That's a bit like asking what's the nearest tube station to London, but I understand where you're getting at. He didn't lift or show any tube tickets, but he did show a shark's tooth. Oh. That he carries around. It's his lucky charm.
Right. This is Christian Gross that we're
yes,
referring to, of
course.
That's
Christian Gross. Christian Gross, who once told Spurs players that they had a mountain to climb and showed them a Toblerone to see just how tall that mountain would be. A true story. But yeah, he's taken over at Schalke.
But the shark's tooth, Rafa. So how did that work?
The shark's tooth is something that he thinks has a lot of useful connotations, I guess, to do with being sharp and being a predator.
Did he pull it out in the press conference, in his unveiling?
He didn't pull it out, as it were, but he was asked about it and he just said, yeah, it's my lucky charm.
Okay.
And he will need a lot of luck and he'll need sharp teeth because Schalke, as you know, are bottom of the table after 29 games without a win. This is last season and this one. And a lot of people think that they might need some kind of rebuilding in the second Bundesliga. Mm. But Schalke feel that they have one more option to change things, and that's with Christian Gross coming in. He's a bit of a Martinet character. Somebody compared him to or called him the Alpine Felix Magath, but it's not a tag that he was particularly fond of. Let's see what he can do.
Okay. Schalke, as you mentioned, currently going down the tubes themselves, down the bottom end of the Bundesliga. Their first game back under their new manager, who was in the Bundesliga with Stuttgart a decade ago, since then at Young Boys and then at Al Ahly in Saudi Arabia. But the first game back under Christian Gross will be away at Hertha Berlin. Is that the pick of the weekend's fixtures for you, Rafa, or what are you looking out for?
Yeah, I think Schalke-Hertha is probably the most exciting one. A lot of games have things riding on it because the Bundesliga is just as chaotic and tight at the top as most leagues this year. But yeah, in terms of narrative, if you want, that's probably most riding on Christian Gross's first game, especially with Bruno Labbadia also coming under a lot of pressure, you know, with all the investment that they've had, courtesy of Lars Windhorst, the London-based financier, to be in the wrong half of the table is not going to be tolerable. And therefore, they need a result. So it should be a good one.
Okay, if they don't win that, they'll have one more chance at home to Hoffenheim to get a victory. Otherwise, they'll have gone an entire year without ever picking up 3 points in a league match. Crikey. Excellent. Next up, let's hear about Spain.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Alvaro, it's 2 days until Leo Messi can do one.
Yes, but it will be really, really unlikely that he doesn't move now in winter. He spoke to La Sexta, to a very famous journalist called Jordi Evole, on Sunday evening. And yeah, he gave a few hints about his future, and he talked a little bit about his life in Barcelona. It was his first interview since the one he gave in September, when he said that he wanted to leave Barcelona, but the team didn't let him go. And when it comes to team news or Messi news, there is nothing very new this time. He hit out at Bartomeu when he was asked about him, the former president, Bartomeu. He said that he's a person basically that didn't fulfill his promises, which is something that he hinted as well back in September. He also referred to the situation of the club. He said and he remarked that the financial situation is really, really bad. He also criticized the club for having let Suarez go on the cheap to a direct rival. He said that he talks to Luis Suarez pretty much every day. And there are things that may be, you know, optimistic looking ahead at his future at Barcelona. He said that Ronald Koeman was a very right appointment for the club. And on his future, he said again that he had nothing clear yet. So those are probably the most interesting takeaways from the interview when it comes to, you know, sport and his future. But then I really like the human aspect of Lionel Messi, because you know that he has this reputation of not being a good talker, but I think that he's quite succinct, and he knows as well how to deliver a message when he has to. He has done it in the past as a maestro, really, I would say. And yeah, he admitted as well that at some point he considered going to the psychologist. He didn't explain for what was the reason exactly. His wife apparently is encouraging him to do that, but Lionel Messi is not too sure about it. I guess it's not easy to be Lionel Messi and tell your secrets to someone else, despite having, you know, the promise from the doctor or the psychologist that he won't say anything. But probably Lionel Messi is too worried about how big his persona is. And he talked about Barcelona as if it was his city. At the end of the day, he lived 20 years there. He was born in Argentina, but he moved to Barcelona when he was 13. So, you know, this can be something, looking at the future and trying to find some hints about Lionel Messi staying or not, something that we have to take into consideration. The fact that Lionel Messi is a Barcelona fan, the fact that there will be elections and maybe the new president can offer him a decent project, and the fact that Lionel Messi is established in Barcelona to the point that he wants to stay in Barcelona after he retires as well. So, yeah, those were the most interesting things from the interview, and I really like it because Lionel Messi showed himself like a very articulate person and, you know, a very likable person as well.
Okay, because there do seem to be two kind of trains of thought. One, largely in the United Kingdom, of people saying, yeah, Man City are going to be in for him, that there's going to be a move already planned for January to bring him in as soon as he can sign for a club outside La Liga. The other one is that now that the dust has settled, now that Bartomeu's gone, now that Pedri and he are playing so well and Barcelona showing that kind of form they had in that 3-0 win over Real Valladolid just before Christmas, that he's happy now and that the storm is over. If you had to make a call now about where he'll be come 1st of February, what would it be?
Barcelona. 1st of okay. February, I think that he will stay at Barcelona. I think that he made it pretty much clear that right now he has nothing. And it will be difficult for him to leave in a month also because he said that he has a certain motivation for this season. He wants to win the titles and all that. But when it comes to the 1st of July, I wouldn't be too sure. I think that many things will play a part and be a factor, like who the new president is, if Laporta or Xavi, former friends of him, are coming back to Barcelona, if the club wins a title or at least competes for a title, not like they didn't do last season when they lost 8-2 against Bayern. So those things will definitely be important. But on the 1st of February, answering to your first question, I'm 99% sure that he will stay at Barcelona.
Ah, so there's a chance.
There's a chance.
Yeah, a slight one, yeah.
Atletico Madrid still top of the table, level on points with Real Madrid, but with two games in hand over their City rivals. But big news over the Christmas period being that Kieran Trippier is now banned for 13 matches. Alvaro, how much is this going to impact on Los Colchoneros?
I think that a lot, because Atletico de Madrid doesn't have a good replacement for Kieran Trippier. They had Arias. Arias is not playing for them this season. And Kieran Trippier was one of those valuable players who was pretty much playing every game. So I don't know what Simeone is going to plan now or plot, but it's going to be a tough call because Atletico didn't have such a competent fullback at the right since Juanfran Torres. So I think that this is going to be quite tough for Atletico as well because Kieran Trippier was offering a lot when it came to set pieces too.
Okay. They had a good result just before Christmas, beating one of the other teams at the top, Real Sociedad, 2-0. 6 points the margin now between those two sides, although, as I mentioned, they are level with Real Madrid. What was this about Diego Costa you were mentioning, though?
Yeah, news broke on Sunday evening. Diego Costa apparently wants to leave Atletico de Madrid. He has asked the club to free him, basically, so he wouldn't... he's got a contract until the end of June 2021. He would like to leave now as a free agent. Some say that is due to personal reasons. But at the same time, his intention seems to be to stay in Europe and play elite football. The truth is that Diego Costa knows that this season he's not going to play a lot if Luis Suarez is there, because Luis Suarez is Simeone's favorite. And the truth is as well that since his arrival in January 2018, Diego Costa has never been the player he was once for Chelsea or for Atletico de Madrid. He knows that. He knows that in the pecking order, he has lost a lot of hierarchy and importance, and those may be the, or seem to be the reason, the reasons behind his departure. I mean, he wants to leave now, and this will probably be well accepted by Atletico de Madrid, considering that they have some financial problems as well due to the pandemic, are not having fans in the stands, and Atletico de Madrid will be free from one of the highest salaries in the squad.
The Liga returns to action this Tuesday evening, 29th of December. Among the fixtures in this midweek round are 6th place Sevilla up against Villarreal, Unai Emery's Villarreal, who are in the Champions League places. Also, a Basque derby, Alvaro, between Athletic Club de Bilbao and the aforementioned Real Sociedad. Woof.
No, that's going to be nice. Thursday is a very nice day for Basque clubs, because there are two Basque derbies. Osasuna and Alaves also play.
Ooh.
And yeah, that's going to be really cool. It's a shame that Athletic Club and Real Sociedad still don't know whether they will play the cup final with fans in April. This game definitely will be a good training for them to play without fans. I think that Real Sociedad, they are in a really bad streak now. I mean, they haven't won for a long time, since mid-November as well. The good thing is that Silva is back now, and he's pivotal for them, because in between the lines, he's the player who is articulating all the game. But there are a few things that Real Sociedad has to improve quickly. Number one, if they want to be at the top, they have to start scoring goals. Their main strikers, their number nines, Isak and William José, They have scored only 3 goals each, and that's very important. They have to start scoring more goals. And this Basque derby is a very interesting one, and I would say that Sevilla-Villarreal is one of those games to look out for as well, because Villarreal, they haven't lost since the beginning of September, when they lost at Camp Nou. And the run is excellent. Since football restarted in June, they have lost 4 games out of 26 in all competitions, I believe. Emery or not, Villarreal was a very good team before Emery arrived. But I think that Unai Emery has improved them even more so. And now they are close to signing Etienne Capoue from Watford as well, which will be interesting because they need a player in that position since Iborra's long-term injury. And they've got a new player coming from the academy who is playing so well. And in the Europa League, he shown his level and he scored the goal against Athletic Bilbao. Jeremy, another guy from the Canary Islands, like Pedri. So yeah, I think that everything is pretty good for Villarreal at this stage.
Okay, well, a couple of days until the transfer window opens. Any other hot transfer stories you're willing to share with our listener, James, Julien, Rafa?
Divock Origi to Inter Milan.
Christian Eriksen to Paris Saint-Germain.
That's the one I was going to mention, because of all the Spurs players, the current Spurs players or the former Spurs players who Pochettino had at the club, I think Eriksen is the one that could actually tick the most boxes. I don't believe in Dele Alli at all. I didn't believe in the rumours of sending him to PSG in the summer either. But Eriksen, because he's been made available by Inter, because he has a profile that could actually be quite good for PSG. They lack a bit of creativity at times in midfield, especially when Marco Verratti is not there and he spent a lot of time injured this season again. So I think this one, maybe with someone going the other way on a sort of a loan swap, although they'll be hard to do those deals, but potentially that could be an option. Or even if Julian Draxler, who they've tried so hard to sell in the last transfer window, who only has 6 months left on his contract, if he was to leave and they would be looking for a replacement, I think Eriksen could be of interest of PSG.
Jules, we had the story in France of the TV rights falling through with MediaPro. And I think, was it 360 million euros that French clubs are losing because of that? Will that have any effect on perhaps one or two players becoming available, or will they still be sold in the summer, the big ones?
No, I think someone like Memphis Depay, for example, despite Lyon doing so well and Memphis doing really well, If Lyon can find someone who come and get him, maybe someone like Barcelona who could sell Ricky Puig, for example, and get some money to spend on Memphis, who won't cost you much in transfer fees because he's free in 6 months. So they'll probably be looking between 5 and 10 million euros for Memphis. I think it's an absolute bargain. But that would help Lyon saving the wages that they pay him. And he's on 450,000 euros a month, which is a lot of money for even a club like Lyon, because that money from the TV rights from MediaPro has never come in. So in those situations, Rafa, you're right. I think Lyon maybe in normal circumstances would have tried to hold on because they have a shot of winning the league. But financially, it's still so bad for them that part of them is thinking, you know what, if we can get some money now and release a little bit like the pressure on the wage bill, then they will do it.
All right, well, we'll hear a little bit more about Lyon and their status leading Ligue 1 and about the end, finally, of this long decade without Raymond Domenech in our lives next on the Totally Football Show European Edition.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Liga is still tied. Lyon and Lille both winning. They are still tied. A point ahead of Paris Saint-Germain at the top of Ligue 1. Lille had a 3-2 win at Montpellier. Ooh, that Delors overhead kick, Jules, woof.
L'appel de Sambia dans le dos de Jonathan Bamba, le centre est bon, et la volée, c'est magnifique, c'est exceptionnel.
Amazing, yeah, one of the goals of the season, if not the goal of the season so far, with Cardona. I'm sure you remember that incredible volley that the Brest striker had at the start of the season. Mm. But that was very spectacular. It was a great game, and Lille are showing why they have to be taken very seriously. They're only a goal, they're only second because of one goal compared to Lyon, who are top. But they have a very strong squad with a really, really good manager in Christophe Galtier. They've sold the club, they've changed ownership, and maybe, or let's hope that doesn't have a negative impact on their team. Mm. But they said they won't have to sell in January, which is great news. But they're looking really, really strong.
Lyon, meantime, beating Nantes 3-0. Nantes subsequently firing their manager, who I didn't realize he was the interim chap who'd come in after they got rid of Christian Gourcuff.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a shock. But as is the man who they've hired now as the permanent replacement, the former France boss Romain Dominic. The stars have aligned, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Jules, what do you think? He hasn't been, I'm not sure what he's been doing in the last decade since leaving the France job, but he hasn't been in club management for over 27 years. How is this going to work?
I don't know where to start. I mean, you know, people in France called him the worst manager in the French football history. Or like every level, every division, every club put together. Obviously, 2010 was a disaster. His whole tenure was a disaster at the head of the national team. Since then, James, he's been head of the Managers Union in France. He's done a lot of theater. He's become a TV pundit as well with his wife, Estelle, on her show. So he's done a lot of things, but he's still the same guy who criticize Gasperini, for example, calling him a bad manager. He's still the same guy who thinks it's a good idea to come out regularly and have a pop at some managers who've done by far a better job than he's ever done in his whole life. Mm. And this story is funny, just quickly, because Raymond Domenech will be 69 next month in January. And in France, there's a rule that is not that official, but it says that if you're under 66 years of age, you cannot manage in France. You need a special derogation to do so. So they give you the derogation without too much trouble. But still, when Claudio Ranieri was appointed at Nantes back in 2017, Domenech was outraged and publicly criticized Ranieri and publicly saying like he should not be managing, because at the time he was 67, so above the age limit. And Domenech, as a head of the Managers Union, was going mad on every single radio show, TV show, saying Ranieri should not come to France. He should not have a derogation. He should not be managing Nantes. And funnily enough, Ranieri at the time was younger than Raymond Domenech is currently now after signing his deal. But the best line of that story is Claudio Ranieri then one day after a game at Nantes had this incredible reaction to Raymond Domenech in his press conference in almost a perfect French, saying, "If Raymond Domenech wants to talk to me about theater, then I can listen. But if Raymond Domenech wants to talk to me about football, then never. Never, never will I listen to him." And I think that's what we all think about Raymond Domenech right now. And I didn't want to be too harsh, because I'm thinking like, oh, imagine if that goes back to him. And we have had so many fights and issues, me and him, that I didn't want to be too harsh.
Is it because of your star signs that you don't get on?
yeah, probably Libra. And I think he's a Capricorn, I think. No. What's after Capricorn? Because he's late in January, I think.
Sagittarius? Oh, no, hang on. Sagittarius is before.
I don't know why.
Okay.
But yeah.
Famously, Raymond Domenech, was this ever confirmed?
Yeah.
Wouldn't pick players for the French national side if they didn't have the right star sign.
Yeah, makes S.
You can't have too many Leos. He told me face to face, very seriously, you can't have too many Leos in your team.
Okay.
And I was like, but why? He said, because they'll clash. It will be a negative atmosphere in your team. I said, but how do you know if you've never played Leos together? He was like, but this is what says in the cards. And I was like, this is me done. This guy cannot be a manager. It's not possible.
Also,
he's a Capricorn. He's a Capricorn like me. This is devastating.
Okay, so he's Mrs.
Lionel Messi is just lucky that he's not French.
Truly. So one of the other great stories, you mentioned him taking part in his wife Estelle's programs. It was, of course, Estelle that he proposed to, in his post-match interview after a French game. She was back at the studio and he said, I'd just like to...
It was worse than a French game, James. It was after they were shamefully knocked out of the Euro 2008 after losing to Italy in that third game, where they were obviously World Cup finalist 2 years before that, and he thought after such a disaster, because he was really disastrous in Switzerland, that competition, he thought it was a good idea, instead of coming up with maybe owning some responsibility to the disaster, or I don't know, finding a good reason why the French performed so badly, he thought, let's ask for her to marry me and think it's a good idea.
Well, that's one match that did go his way. So that's nice, eh? They are just outside the relegation zone, Nantes. They haven't won in 8 league matches. 3 points clear of the drop. Their first game under Dominic will be at home to Reims. Mauricio Pochettino's first Paris Saint-Germain game looks like being away at Saint-Etienne.
That's right, yeah. On
Although
January
he hasn't 6th. Actually signed yet. Has he? Has Poch actually signed now for PSG?
No, not yet. It will be announced in the next few days. They were waiting to have an agreement with Thomas Tuchel, which happened on Sunday night. There's a few details with Pochettino's contract and his coaching staff. He wants to come with Sebastiano, who is his fitness coach, one of his two sons, Miguel D'Agostino and Jesus Perez, the usual assistant, Tony Jimenez as well, the goalkeeping coach. So there's just those things to sort out. I think it will be done pretty quickly now.
Well, there you go. That's something to look forward to for 2021, which is just around the corner. Listeners, I'm sure you've noticed. That wraps it up, though, pretty much for this final Totally Football Show of 2020. What's been your standout moment, Jules, of this remarkable year?
La 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 la, Choupo-Moting. La 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 la, Choupo-Moting.
Neymar pour Mbappé, Mbappé tout seul, Mbappé qui saute, Choupo-Moti, Choupo-Moti, Choupo-Moti qui envoie le Paris Saint-Germain en demi-finale de la Ligue des Champions.
Wow.
Could only be the PSG Atalanta game. James mentioned it earlier.
You scraped by 10-man Atalanta thanks to a goal from Choupo-Moting, and that's the thing you celebrate.
And then he ditches you. He ditches you for the Champions of Europe. He basically turns coat the same night.
He's going to go to Bayern and win nothing because he's not going to win the league with Bayern. They are a better side than them in the Bundesliga, and it would be a shame for him. Wow. But listen, he saw the background. He saw the times where our hearts were broken, and now it was good to finally broke other people's hearts.
Right.
And I was sad for Atalanta because I love
the
them.
People
and
of Bergamo. Who,
I know the people of Bergamo.
They haven't suffered enough.
And Papu Gomez. But yeah, he has to be the highlight of 2020.
Jules finally gets a chance at being a heartbreaker. Nice
exactly.
to see. James Horncastle, what's been your moment of 2020 as we sign off?
I think you have to go all the way back to the spring.
Yeah,
when Daniele De Rossi got his wife, who's an actress, she got a makeup artist to come around and basically make him up as an old man, unrecognizable, so he could go and watch the Rome Derby in the Curva Sud for the first time. That's got to be my moment of 2020.
Nice one, Rafa. Have you got something that stands out from a pretty glorious year in German football?
I think watching the Champions League final alongside my learned friend Julian Laurence was.
I knew it
was the best moment for all sorts of reasons.
Let's move on.
La 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 la. Choupo-Moting.
Kingsley Coman. And Alvaro, how about you?
Well, if Choupo-Moting is a person that breaks hearts, what about Philippe Coutinho scoring a goal against Barcelona in the Champions League quarterfinals? I think that has to be one of the moments of the year, too, because it explains so much about Bayern, so much about Barcelona.
Humillación histórica del Bayern al Barça. Crisis, incendio, hoguera, lo que quieran. Barça 2, Bayern 8.
And if I can make one special mention, I will make one for Diego Armando Maradona, because he left us in 2020.
Of course, of course. All right then. Well, 2020 prepares to shut up shop, and that's what we're going to do now. We'll see you on the other side. Happy New Year, and whatever it is in your language, listener. Many thanks to Alvaro, Rafa, Jules, and James, and we'll see you in a week's time on the Totally Football Show European Edition.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.